Hear the word of the Lord as we find it in the Proverbs. I took various texts for you in the bulletin. They also will be on the screens overhead. Hear the word of the Lord. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a war club or a sword or a sharp arrow. Trusting in a treacherous man in a time of trouble is like a bad tooth or a foot that slips. Whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Do not forsake your friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. And as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And thus far, the reading of God's Word. There have only been, to my knowledge, and I'm not a great, huge reader, so take this with a grain of salt. But from what I can tell, there's only been two really great works on friendship in the English language. One was barely in the English language, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and I wasn't smart enough to follow that one, but the movies helped. The other one, though, and what I consider to be the truly greatest work ever on friendship, is the Winnie the Pooh series by A.A. Milne. And he finishes his series. If you only have had Milne translated for you by Disney, then I beg you, go out and get the complete stories of Winnie the Pooh and read them. Read them to your children if you have them. Buy somebody else's children so you can read them to them, whatever it takes. He finishes a story with a book called House on Pooh Corner. And the last kind of adventure the characters in 100 Acre Wood have is to find a house for Owl. Owl's house has been blown down by a storm. He needs a new house. Eeyore has gone off and found one. He says he's found the perfect house for Owl. And so he goes and he gets all of his friends and he brings them to this house that he's found. And of course, as they're walking up, Piglet notices that they're walking straight toward the house that he lives in, the house that his family has lived in for generations, the house of his grandfather, Trespassers William. And everybody kind of feels uncomfortable because we're about to give Owl Piglet's house. And Eeyore gets there and says, "See, isn't it perfect?" And Al goes, "Well, as a matter of fact, that would be a perfect house for me." And Christopher Robin, always kind of the wise one in the group, says, "Well, what do you think, Piglet?" And Piglet swallows hard and says, "I think it's the best house anyone's ever lived in." And Christopher Robin says, "Well, if you've lost your house, you do need a place to live. Piglet, where would you live if you lost your house?" And as the tears welled up in Piglet's eyes, Winnie the Pooh said, "Well, he would live with me, of course." And Piglet grabbed his hand and said, "Thank you, Pooh, I would love to." And there's something disarming about the charm and the beauty of that kind of friendship. On one hand, it makes us go, "Who would do that for me? Who would welcome me into their home? Who would give me their most valuable, their most prized possession if I needed it?" On the other hand, there's something bittersweet to it because we know that kind of friendship is only found in imaginary places like the 100 Acre Woods. And that most of us don't live in that place of friendship. Most of us don't have those kind of friends, and our hearts kind of long for it. We wish we could live with the comfort of knowing that our entire community has our interests at heart. And our entire community would reach out and give themselves to us if we had a need. We wish we could know that, but we don't. But we don't. Implicitly, in our heart of hearts, we long for better friendships. And we know that we are in danger if we don't have close people near us who know us. We know we live in danger. And we live in a culture that doesn't stress friendship. And in a culture where, frankly, a lot of people think friendship is dying out. USA Today published another report last summer saying that the average person in Britain has it says 2 in 5 Brits feel they are drifting away from their friends. The average American says he is down to having 2 friends. And 1 in 4, 25% of Americans say they have no true friends. We live in a time when, and maybe it's always been this way, but no culture, no predominant subculture, no powerful voice in our world is speaking about friendship. Think of it like this. In kind of the liberal self-actualization, seek your own joy culture, what's the focus? The relational focus is purely romance, right? I mean, you walk through the checkout lines and it's magazine cover after magazine cover saying who is sleeping with whom and how can you get the romance you've always wanted. There's not a single one of those covers saying, guess who's best friends with whom now? Nobody's buying that. Nobody's buying that. The liberal culture doesn't put that on us. But the conservative culture doesn't either. The conservative culture is focusing on family, right? Nobody's writing focus on the friendship. The conservative culture is all about the family and spend even more time with your children and spend more time with your kids and with your wife and be absolutely sure that nothing can assault this fortress that you've built. And nobody's talking about how to go out or the importance of going out and establishing community. Nobody's talking about friendship. And in the true predominant theme of our culture is greed, as it has gone after greed in the last 30 years. And how common is it for us to hear someone say that friendship is the most important thing in their life right before they move across the continent to take another job? I've done that. How many people do you know who have refused to change jobs because of their friendships? I don't know any. Nobody stresses friendships, and it's been that way for a long time. Tim Keller and Mark Driscoll are both writing books, doing research on friendships, and both of them say, and I mean, those are the two apostles, so if they say it, it's got to be true. But both of them say that there's not been a Christian book dedicated to the subject of male friendship since the 12th century. 800 years, we've just kind of neglected this one. It's never been stressed. And yet, the wisdom literature of the Bible talks about friendship all the time. Ecclesiastes tells us, woe to the one who's left alone. Woe to the one who has no companions. For if he falls down, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. If two people are hard to overwhelm, but it's easy to overtake a single person by himself. If one person gets cold, he has no one to warm him up. But if there are two, they can keep each other warm. We know that. We feel that vulnerability. That if we have no friends, nothing protects us from foolishness. If we have no friends, no one can tell us what we're really like. If we have no friends, no one can get into our life and say, you have such self-destructive habits. Don't you see what you're like? Don't you see the road you're passing down? Can you not see that your pride is driving people away? Can you not see that what you think passes as a sense of humor is making people feel uncomfortable around you? If you have no friends, then we're headed toward destruction, and we know that. but we don't seem to know how to fix it. If we have no friends, then there's no one there to share joy. If we have no friends, what's the purpose of having a good time if there's no one to share it with? What's the purpose of having a great memory if there's no one there to recount it with? We know that we need friends, but we don't know how to get them. Wisdom teaches that we perish for lack of friends. The wisdom of the Bible also teaches that we perish from having the wrong friends. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. A friend is someone that you share a path with. A friend is someone that you pursue a common horizon with, a common goal with, a common objective with. And as we talked about from the very beginning in our study of Proverbs, we're seeing that life and the pursuit of wisdom is not a singular kind of lightning bolt type thing, but it's a walk, it's a journey. And the Bible describes your entire life as a journey. And you will share the destination of the people that you walk with. If you walk with wise people, if you surround yourself with wise people, you will receive wisdom in life. If you surround yourself with fools, you're headed toward foolishness. If you surround yourself with sinners, you're headed toward destruction. If you surround yourself with people who are pursuing Christ, you will find Christ. You're sharing the path of the people that you travel with. And someone will say to me, when I was a campus minister, I get this question all the time. All the time. It was funny. Every single semester I was a campus minister, somebody would call me and say, well, you know, my son, he's really a great guy, but he's gotten into the wrong group of friends. And for about the first 5-6 years, I just kind of went, oh, I'm really sorry about to hear that. In the last 4 or 5 years, I finally was courageous enough to go, well, if your son is hanging with the wrong crowd, he probably is the wrong crowd. I'm really sorry to tell you that. But I don't know too many potheads who like to hang out with sober people. I'm really sorry to be the one who has to tell you that. But it's true. It really is that simple. Not only are you like your friends, but you will share their destination. If your girlfriend is sexually immoral, you will be sexually immoral. You are sharing their destination. And we have to give the best of our attention to being self-conscious, being deliberate about who we share our lives with. And we have to focus on how we can make friends by being a friend. So what we want to do today is we want to look at what is a friend, how we can be and make friends, and then how Christ enables us to do that. So first thing I want us to see is, what is a friend? What is a friend? A friend is someone who shares your journey. It's someone who's going in the same direction. C.S. Lewis describes friendship as two people looking out toward the same horizon. The common desire of friendship is not a friend, right? Friends don't go out looking for each other. That's how you find spouses. You go out looking for spouses. Friends, you go out looking for something else. You love Norse mythology. And you find somebody else in the library who loves Norse mythology. And the next thing you know, you have a friend. The first sentence of friendship is typically, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one who liked this. You too? Let's walk together. And that is true at a fundamental level. And it's funny because Bianca and I were talking about this and I was trying to figure out what to say today. And we were talking about the friends that I've had and I was getting kind of, you know, in self-pity mode as I usually do. Saying, well, maybe I don't have more friends because I'm not interested in anything. I don't want to do anything. You know, the church is the only thing I do. And she said, well, that's crazy. She said, your best friend in college, you two had nothing in common. He was nice. It's true. And she said, why were y'all such good friends? Y'all didn't share any common interests. And without really thinking about it, I just said, well, we were friends because we were both interested in pursuing Christ and we didn't know anybody else who wanted to. And then it hit me. We were such good friends because we wanted to pursue Christ and we didn't know anybody else who wanted to. In other words, he was my friend because he had to be. And I was his friend because I got to be. That's what friends are. They're two people who are sharing a destination and who say, let's walk together. That's where it starts out. And if you'll notice, you see this everywhere. You see this in buddy movies, right? You know, the typical Hollywood buddy movie, two people who hate each other, but who have a common enemy and a common goal. They have to have both. It's not fun to have a goal without an enemy, right? What's the purpose of trying to get the suitcase full of money if there's not people trying to kill you while you do it? And so they have to be together. They have to do everything together. They end up saving each other's life, not because they like each other, but because they've got to get this suitcase full of money, or they have to get this ring destroyed, or whatever it is they're trying to do. And by the end of the movie, they end up being friends. They end up loving each other. At the end of 12 hours of Lord of the Rings, the elf and the dwarf, who hate each other for generations, right? And the dwarf looks at the elf and says, I never thought I would die next to an elf. And the elf says, well, how about dying next to a friend? And you see this in life. You see this, you know, one of the friendships that a lot of us envy the most are the kind of friendships that forge business partners, two people who like each other and are working together. And they form tight, knit friendships, pursuing the same goal, the same way. A friendship is someone who shares your journey, one who is righteous as a guide to his neighbor. But he doesn't just share the journey. He's not using you. And this is where we turn from being companions to being friends. A friend knows you. A friend knows you. Proverbs 26:18 is funny at first. Like a madman who throws firebrands and arrows and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. Like the madman who's going around destroying things and he's not even aware that he's just destroying them is the neighbor who's always going around hurting your feelings, who's leading you to believe things are wrong. And they say, I was only kidding. What's the big deal? Well, I'll tell you what the big deal is. If you took the time to know me, you would know that I was going to take that seriously. One of my good friends, who actually unintentionally ends up being about 10 illustrations in the sermon, so I guess I need to call him and say, hey, we're better friends than I thought. One day we were meeting together. We had to meet with our committee, our bosses. And so we were all kind of in a holding room visiting, and then we would go into the meeting and then leave. And so just as he was going to go into the meeting, I knew I wasn't going to see him again. And so his name is Les Newsom, and I looked at him and said, well, see you, Les. I never really liked you anyway. I just thought that was such a funny joke. It hurt his feelings for like a year. But didn't that seem funny? Isn't that a funny way to say goodbye to somebody? Never really liked you. I don't know. See, that's the kind of thing I had to get corrected about me, right? You think I'm kidding when I tell you that I need to be corrected. I didn't know him well enough to know that one of his greatest fears is that people like him, but nobody befriends him. I didn't take the time to know him. A friend knows people, actually takes the time to know you, so you're not always accidentally stepping on each other's toes, because I know how big your toes are. A friend reciprocates the relationship. That's a hard word for a redneck to say. What does that mean? It means a friend is calling you back as often as you're calling him. A friend reciprocates. If you're always the one initiating, they're not friends with you. They don't really like you. Go get someone else. Just kidding. If someone's always reciprocating, initiating with you, you need to initiate back. You need to initiate back. False companions are like those who are only around the rich. They want to be there because they can get stuff. But a true friend is giving as much as he's getting. He is trying to share in the other person's life as much as the other person is trying to share in his life. He is reciprocating the attention. Does that make sense? You see, in the Proverbs, they talk a lot about riches, how riches make friends. But honestly, in our culture, we're all pretty wealthy. Compared to all those who have ever lived in the history of the world, there's nobody in here who's not in the top 10% of the wealthiest people ever. Our most priceless commodity is our time. Are you giving it to anybody? That's what's truly priceless about you. That's what's valuable about you. Are you reciprocating with your time? That's what friends share. A friend knows you. And I'm going to take a chance here because I am, I hope you understand what I mean when I say this. I'm extremely white, and so whenever I try to borrow phrases from the rap culture, I sound stupid. A friend not only knows you, but he feels you. A friend feels you. He gets you. He knows what you are feeling like. Proverbs 25:20, whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. What does that mean? A friend doesn't have to ask how you're feeling. He gets it. And a friend doesn't always just throw around stupid, trite advice. She knows when she just needs to be quiet and be there. A friend knows when she needs to be quiet and be there. Three years ago, my brother died. This week, 3 years ago, last week, actually. My friends at that time, my friends were the people who drove 6 hours so they could be with me for 10 minutes. A friend feels you. A friend knows how to get to you. A friend knows when to shut up. A friend knows when to pick up the phone. But it takes time. You don't get that immediately. You can't learn that from Dale Carnegie. You have to actually open yourself up and let another person in so that you can see that. And that's difficult. A friend always lets you in. And finally, a friend never lets you down. Because a friend knows you, he can speak deeply into your heart with words that touch you exactly where you need to be touched. Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Think about that text for a second. Isn't that kind of weird? A friend loves at all times, but a brother is born for adversity. What does that mean? Well, it means your brothers, if something terrible happens to you, your family will take you in because they've got to. I mean, just to be honest, you know, they're family. We got to get through this funeral together. Come on. You know, I'll take you in because I have to. But a friend actually likes you. A friend is voluntary. And a friend is there with you all the time. A friend never lets you down. A friend can speak to you. And because they know you and because they feel you, they can speak to you deeply. They can speak to you deeply. A couple years ago, I was going through counseling with a counselor who was very wise, but he was not a friend. And just before he got off the phone with me, he just kind of dropped this atomic bomb. He said, well, Ricky, the problem with you is you're full of self-loathing. When are we going to get together again? Like, what? You just undressed me and hung up? And I was in a funk for like 3 weeks about it. And I finally got on the phone with somebody who knew me and who had known me for a long time. And they were able to take me through my life and take me through how they had seen me grow and take me through times when they had seen the Lord work in my heart and overwhelm bitterness and change me. And he was able to speak to me because he knew me. Because he had never let me down, because he had been constantly there with me at all times, he could speak wisely to me. A friend is there. You just have to be there. And because he was there, he knew me in a way that my counselor didn't and could speak to me words that were encouraging and sanctifying, words that did sharpen me like iron sharpens iron, but they didn't leave me devastated because he knew me. That's the friendship summarized for you. A friend always lets you in and never lets you down. How does that make you feel? Most of us feel a real irony and a real bittersweetness because we know we don't like letting people in. And we know that we often let people down. And so we're not that friend. There's also this kind of irony to friendship, which is the more you need friends, the more you feel your need of friends, the less likely you are to get them. Because if you feel this emptiness, if you feel this void within you, then you're not actually going out to try to get friends. You're going out trying to get props. You're going out trying to get medicine. You want somebody to make you feel better. But a friend isn't looking into the face of a friend. A friend's looking at the same horizon. A friend is coming along saying, I can help you get there. Not, can you help me? You see the problem? Go back to Winnie the Pooh. When Winnie the Pooh was trying to bring the perfect birthday gift to Eeyore, he brought him a pot of honey. That's what you want for your birthday, right? But the problem was, as he was walking along the way to get the gift to Eeyore, he got hungry. And his own needs overwhelmed his desire to be a friend to Eeyore. So what did he do? Well, of course, he ate the honey. If my desire for friendship is so strong that I can't be a friend, I can't pursue something with you, I'm too busy trying to get my own needs met. If I want to be the friend who never lets you down, what do I have to do? Well, I've got to be over my own needs. If I'm always aware of what I need, if my primary awareness is what I need today, I can't be the guy who never lets you down, because I'm never even going to notice if that possibility exists. To never let you down, I have to put your needs in front of mine. And if the thing I'm most powerfully aware of is my only loneliness, I can't be that person. And we need somebody to come and meet that for us. And that brings us back to Jesus' teaching on friendship. That bittersweet irony leads me to see a bankruptcy of my own soul. I don't have within me what I need to be a good friend. Where can I go to find it? And the beautiful thing is, when we turn to the Gospels, you see the opposite of what you would expect. If you know the Bible, the story of the Bible is this. God, the creator of the universe, created us, and we rebelled against him. And he engaged in a covenant to save us. And he came to save us. And naturally, we would think he would look upon us like we're characters in a book. Or like, you know, pets, like an ant farm at best. I mean, he's God. And in case you haven't noticed, you're not. You're way different. You're infinitely lower. And you would think he would look at you like you're infinitely lower. But he doesn't. He comes to us, and at a table, during a meal, Jesus says, no longer do I call you servants, because servants don't know what their master is doing. But I've called you friends. For all that I've heard from my Father, I've made known to you. You're no longer my servants, you're my friends. And during that meal, he tells them everything. He tells them that he's come to die for them. He tells them that they're going to betray him, but that he loves them anyway. And he tells them how much his heart hurts. He tells them how he is in bitter agony. He tells them how he is sorrowful unto death. He begs them to pray for him. He becomes their friend. He becomes their friend. The Lord of the universe becomes their friend, and he lets his friends in, and he never lets his friends down. Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You see, Jesus chose his friends badly. He chose friends that he knew would disappoint him. He chose friends that he knew would betray him. He chose friends that he knew would deny him. Even Peter, his best friend, said, I would never deny you. I will die for you. And he says, Peter, before the morning, you're going to deny me three times. You'll deny that you even know me. He chose his friends badly. He went to pray in the garden and he begged them, pray for me. I need encouragement. And they all fell asleep. And he went back and he woke them up and he said, pray for me. I need you. And they fell asleep. And he came back to them again and he said, please, don't make me be alone. Don't leave me alone. and they fell asleep. And he was arrested and they ran away. And his very best friend, within earshot of him, said, "I've never met the man." And Jesus looked at him and he knew what he had said. He chose his friends badly, and he died for those friends. He died for their betrayal. He suffered their betrayal. He suffered for their weakness. And his suffering has healed them. And that's the beautiful thing. When he was resurrected from the dead, he told Mary, the first person to see him, he said, "Go tell the disciples." And he said, "And Peter. Tell Peter. I want to meet him. I'll see him in Jerusalem. Tell Peter," because Peter doesn't think he's my friend anymore. Peter is embarrassed. Peter is ashamed of what he's done. "Tell Peter, I'm going to look for him. I haven't forgotten him. He's still my friend." And when we receive that, we understand that Jesus knew he was getting bad friends, and he knew that we were going to fail to be the friend that we would be, then when we do fail, it makes us run to him. And it makes us beg him to fill the void that's within us that makes us such bad friends. And that enables us to apologize and ask forgiveness. It enables us to live with the humility that we need to be true friends. Jesus comes along and he fills us and he enables us to love and he enables us to be a friend. And so with the time that we have left, I want to talk to you about being a friend, but some of you need to stop right there. And you need to ask yourself, is that real to you at all? Is the reality of Jesus dying for his friends a powerful truth in your life, or does it make you yawn and want to get on to lunch? Does it affect you? Does it enable you to love? Does it enable you to think less of yourself? Think about yourself less often? If it doesn't, stop right there and go to the Lord and tell him, "I know you're supposed to be my friend, but that's not enough. And I need you to make it enough." And when he makes it enough, he'll teach you how to have friends. And the first thing he'll show you is that you have to find an interest. And you have to pray for a companion. Like I said, the friend himself isn't the object of your friendship. You're seeking something together. And because of that, a friend is something you discover. This is a sweet verse. Proverbs 27:9 says, "Oil and perfume make the heart glad. And the sweetness of a friend comes from its earnest counsel." Now, I'm from the South. And let me tell you something about cooking in the South. One rule: butter and sugar makes everything better. So everything is sweet. If you've ever been to Mississippi and had green beans, you've thought to yourself, beans don't grow like this anywhere else. It's because they're smothered in butter and sugar. Sugar makes everything better. Try them on your green beans. Your kids will start to eat them. But they didn't have sugar in the Bible. Sugar had never been refined at the time of the Bible. It had been in India, but not in where they were from. And so something sweet was something that was discovered unexpectedly. You didn't know something was going to be sweet until you put your hand to it and went, "Oh, wow, what's that?" And friendship is like that. You don't know that you're coming to something that's going to make you glad until all of a sudden somebody shows they're interested in you. Someone gives you counsel that lets you know they actually know you, and it's sweet. It's surprising. And you pursue something together. The first step of being a friend is you have to find an interest and pursue it, and you pray for the Lord to give you companions. And then once you find those companions, you have to forge a friendship. If you want to have friends, I'm sorry, this is like the least popular thing I can possibly say. If you want to have friends, you have to make time for them. And you want to know how obvious it is that that's unpopular? Well, how do you describe your best friends? You know how most people describe their best friends in our culture? He's such a good friend, I can go months without talking to him, and then we can pick up right where we left off. Wow. Your best friend is somebody you can go months without talking to? You know what that tells me about you? You haven't made a friend since childhood. And that is accurate for most of us. Most of us have not made true friends since childhood, since back in the days when we cared. Since back in the days when they were so important that we made effort to make them. Your friends have to have time in your life when you can be together. You have to identify them the way Jesus identified his disciples. And then he pulled them away from everybody else. And he spent time with them. And he ate with them. Bo gave me this quote, and of course I don't remember who said it. So Bo, I'm going to quote Bo. He can tell you who said it first. Bo says that at the end of your life, your best friends will be the people you ate with the most. Who do you spend your time with? Who do you spend your time with? Be with them. It's not a happenstance. It's not unexpected that Jesus revealed the depth of his friendship with his disciples over a meal. He was with them all the time. Be with them. Carve out time together. Protect time together. And then show yourself to be a friend. Thirdly, you have to show yourself to be a friend. How does Paul say to do it? The Apostle Paul says, greet each other with a holy kiss. Greet each other with a holy kiss. That's a beautiful text. What does it mean? It means don't ignore each other. If you want people to be your friend, be happy to see them. Rejoice when you see them. Let them know that you like them. And you know why that's important? It is important because a lot of you ladies were really worried this morning that somebody might see that you're wearing the same thing this Sunday that you wore last Sunday. And I'm going to explain to you why nobody in this room is thinking she wore the same thing she wore last Sunday. You know why nobody's thinking that? Because they are all worried about what they're wearing. Nobody remembers what you wore last Sunday. Not because they don't like you. Nobody remembers what you wore because they're obsessed with themselves. Everybody in here is just as insecure as you are. Everybody in here is just as self-obsessed as you are. And if you want to be a friend, focus on them. Let them know that you like them. Be happy to see them. I mean, when you walk into a crowded room, isn't that what you look for? Who's going to be happy to see me? That's who I'm going to go talk to. Be happy to see each other. And encourage each other. G.K. Chesterton said, the fear of sentimentality is the cheapest fear. We say so long when what we mean is, I love you and I'm going to miss you. Don't fear being happy to see each other, and don't fear encouraging each other. Don't fear saying something positive to each other. Some of you think it's you're God's gift of negativity. Your gift is not pointing out what everybody else does wrong. It's not. I promise. That gift's all taken up. A friend is able to look at you and see what you're becoming and encourage that. I told y'all a couple of weeks ago about being discouraged because I'd hurt somebody's feelings unbeknownst to myself. I'd hurt their feelings, and I was discouraged, not because I did that. I mean, I've done that many, many, many times. I was discouraged because I thought I was getting better. And a friend of mine was on the phone. He asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm writing out an apology. I told him the story. I read him the apology. And he sweetly said to me, Ricky Dean, you're getting better. You apologize faster and better than you used to. And I'm glad to be your friend. He sees what the Lord's doing in me. Be that. Be that for somebody else. And finally, the final step of a friendship is that you do lovingly correct your friends because you see when they're on paths of self-destruction and you don't want them to go down those paths. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. You have to correct people if you love them. But please get the order of this right. I worked really hard on this order. Okay? It's last. I'm just going to be honest. I'm not usually honest. Preachers aren't paid to be honest. Some of you, let's be a little less honest. Some people in my life, I don't care how critical they are of me because they've never said anything nice. And if I don't think you like me, if I don't know that you care about me, I really don't care what your criticism is. That's the way most of us live, isn't it? Well, of course you see things that are wrong. You don't like me. But when people that I love, people who have walked near me and been close to me, come and criticize me, I take that very seriously. Is there anybody that you can lovingly correct as a friend? Is there anybody that you can correct and they would say, man, faithful are the wounds of a friend. You said that to me because you love me. Don't let your friends just go down paths of self-destruction. Don't be afraid to speak to them and correct them. But make sure they know that you love them first. And that doesn't mean you come up to them and go, hey, I really love you, but. That means spend a year winning their trust, loving them. You know, the story of Winnie the Pooh breaks our hearts. And the reason why the story of Winnie the Pooh breaks your heart is because Christopher Robin grows too old for his friends, and he has to leave them. And I think the message of friendship in the Bible asks us, have we left our friends behind as part of our childhood? We know implicitly that friendships increase joy because we have people to share it with. And we have people to retell stories with. We know that friends turn knowledge into wisdom as we learn together and see things from a different angle that we wouldn't have seen. We know that friends bring us out of ourselves and turn holiness, study of the law, into actual righteousness because we're loving our neighbor the way we love ourselves. Friends do that, those things to us. And so I beg you, set aside time. Set aside the time. And ask the Lord to enable you to make and keep and be friends. Please pray with me.